Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Hammer and Rails podcast. I am Casey Bartley on the Hammer and Rails. I am with the legend of Sean McCarthy, Drew Schneider, all the way from Manhattan, Kansas. How are you doing, Drew?
Living life and man happiness, man.
I'm glad you already have a nickname for the place.
It's not my nickname, apparently, what some people refer to it as.
Yeah, your nickname is This Is Not Texas, so it's great.
Yeah. I was going to say about Manhattan is I really like Manhattan. I just wish it wasn't in the middle of Kansas.
Yeah, that it seems like the place fallout will happen.
Yeah, well, we've got this giant military base. Like Fort Riley is right down the road from me. The cool thing about Manhattan is when they really get doing their like training drills and stuff, my house shakes like every night because they're firing off giant howitzers.
Oh, good.
I know. Nobody told me about that shit when I moved in.
Of course not.
It wasn't mentioned until, we were laying in bed one night, and I was like, whoa, my, what is that?
Are we dying?
Yeah, earthquake?
Get the child.
And then you start hearing, they start shooting off their 50 cals, and you can hear that, too. So it's quite interesting.
I would imagine the cool thing about living in Manhattan is you say you live in Manhattan, and then for a few seconds, people think you live in New York City.
Yeah, yeah. No, I live in a nice big house in Manhattan. And they're like, oh, my God.
I've got a yard.
Yeah, yeah. No, this house in Manhattan would be quite pricey. But here, it's nothing. Land cheap in Kansas.
Well, we are here to talk about Purdue football. And Woo. We say that with a whole lot more excitement than we had last year. Even with bringing in Brom, the fresh stink of Hazel was still strong on this team. Now we're coming off a bowl win. In general, just to start off, how much happier are you this year knowing you're going to watch a Brom coach team after knowing what he's capable of?
It'll certainly make for some more interesting viewing. I feel like football will no longer be getting a colorectal exam, which was the Hazel era. It was just like, oh my God, I'm going to have to make it through this. Grit your teeth, close your eyes, and pray a little bit.
That makes a hell of a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into it, because the one problem when you have a coach who leaves your roster in shambles for 4 years, depth does not rebuild in just one season. So what do we have to look forward to in the 2019 recruiting class that will really come help and push Brohm's program to the next level?
All right. Well, first, we obviously have the headliner, which is local boy George Karloftis from West Lafayette. And Karloftis just has been hitting the camp scenes, and everybody's starting to see just what, like, a freak of nature this dude is. He's big and fast and strong. 247 Sports, which does a lot of their, I would say their best work is in the Midwest. I think they find a lot of good Midwestern players. Steve Wolfong is the guy that does a lot of their evaluating. And they just shot Karloftis up the board from like mid-100s to then they have him ranked as the 12th best player in the nation, the best strong side defensive end, the best player in Indiana. And he's like, basically, when they redo their, right now there's only 12 or 10 five-star players, but as the season goes on, they give it sort of goes more and more. So at this point, Karloftis, you can pretty much consider him a five-star defensive end, which is pretty amazing for Purdue. And he fits exactly what Holt likes to do. He likes bigger, taller defensive ends who can get their hands up, get in the passing lanes, and you know, hold their own in the run game while still being able to get to the quarterback. And that's what he does.
It's not even just rare for Purdue to land one, just for Indiana to have one is pretty rare.
Yeah,
weird, isn't it? I believe when we had this conversation last year, you were talking about just the recruiting scene in Indiana in general. The talent is just very low, especially when it comes to top star guys.
Yeah, and you know, that's slowly starting to change. You're starting to see not some bigger name guys. There's just not a lot of top tier talent in Indiana. You can fill your roster out with Indiana players and be a pretty good team. But the top tier, there's good, maybe the top five, and then there's usually a pretty big drop off to like these five guys are the best, and everybody else is sort of, you know, in the mix one way or another, but maybe not in that elite group. And so, yeah, to have somebody this, I mean, Karloftis will be the top, if he were to say end up being ranked in the top 15 nationally by the end of it, that would be the best player Indiana has put out in a long time, since Hunter Johnson would probably be the next best guy. There's been a couple other really good players, but just the fact that he plays such a position, like a premium position too. I'm not saying that like wide receiver isn't like a premium position, but you can find a lot of good wide receivers. It's hard to find, especially right out of the box, good big defensive ends. And it's just
It's refreshing to see a coach who's actually, you know, taking care of his home ground, because a lot of the stories we all heard is that Hazel just ignored any moderate to good talent in his backyard for the most part.
Yeah.
And, you know, Brohm's had Karloftis locked up since October of 2017. He's the first recruit for the 2019 class.
Yeah, no, like he was part of Brohm's big strategy. What you need to put together a good recruiting class is you really need that sort of anchor to say, hey, look, you know, you can be a good player and come to Purdue. And you need that guy that sort of leads the way with the, you know, Purdue flag on social media and, you know, in camp. And you know, having players do recruiting for you is, especially players high caliber as Karloftis, huge benefit just to starting out.
And especially going forward, if they do have big careers, jump into NFL careers. Yeah. Purdue's had a pretty good track record of having players that almost played better in the league than they have for us.
Like Ricardo Allen and, yeah.
A lot of defensive linemen.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, you know, Karloftis is a guy that just has unlimited potential. Now, that is said, it's all potential. And I feel, you know, sometimes I feel bad building these guys up to be the next, you know, coming of Ryan Kerrigan. And that's a pretty lofty perch. But Karloftis certainly, if everything works out, he certainly appears to have the attitude and the physical ability to be that sort of player. Now, obviously, there's no guarantees, but it's nice to have a guy that, you know, that's the ceiling is like really good NFL player.
Yeah, and Purdue has a good track record with defensive linemen.
Yeah.
So the next guy we have recruited, who I see as the next highest, is Mershon Rice out of Reynoldsburg, Ohio.
Yeah.
Now, he's got that fun little tag of athlete.
He's most likely going to be come in as a wide receiver. He can play wide receiver or safety. I would almost be more interested in seeing him play safety just because we've done a really good job of recruiting wide receivers, and we've had been hit and miss at safety. But I think he's going to come in and be a wide receiver, at least initially. You know, he's a for big kid, 6'2", 200 pounds. Another guy that's coming in that's physically ready to play. And I think that's been sort of a big push for Brohm in certain positions, is having, as you mentioned, the roster wasn't super great coming when he entered, to say the least. So he's been looking for guys that can come in and physically compete day one.
How much of a premium does Brohm put on receivers in his offense?
You know, I think that's one of the marquee positions, and how you can sort of go about building a team. And this is, you know, I follow, you know, right for Clemson as well. And this is basically how Clemson put together where they are now, is they started out with the skill positions, getting the five-star skill position guys and maybe a couple of guys on defense. And then you sort of build up the excitement and you score a lot of points. And all of a sudden the defensive guys and the offensive linemen say, oh, okay, we'll be cool to come here. So picking up these skill position guys and sort of building the excitement around the program is going to be crucial for Purdue moving forward. And I feel like getting guys like Rice or, you know, the guys we got last year, Ahmad Anderson and Rondale Moore.
Moore's pretty big for a receiver as well, correct?
No. Moore's pretty small for a receiver. If Moore was bigger, he would have been a higher profile recruit. Rondale's like 5'9", maybe. They have him listed as 5'8.5", 175 pounds. So he's more of sort of explosive slot receiver. Now, we did get like a guy like Corey Taylor last year. He was 6'5", 200. You're thinking Corey Taylor, 6'5", 200 coming in. Another guy that, like I said, physically ready to compete from day one in those positions.
So that's a good mix of big and then small receivers, it sounds like.
Yeah, that's what you'll see. You'll see Purdue. You'll see us go big on the outside and short little guys in the slot.
And in the bowl game, I mean, our receiving corps last year was not talented.
Mm-mm.
And definitely not fast.
Well, we had a couple guys that were fast but had other issues. Our JUCO guys, I felt like, were fast. One of them was hurt, and Zico just, for whatever reason, could not catch the ball consistently, which was a major problem with all our receivers.
And Brohm was still able to find him that's how we won the bowl game, just consistent isolation one-on-one on the outside.
We found Mahungu, who could not catch anything, and then finally
I was not going to attempt his name.
Hopefully, Anthony, if you're listening, I hope that was a close approximation. he caught fire, and that's the sort of outside, that's what Brohm does. It's a really almost like it's a very pro style approach where Brohm finds a matchup he likes, either through moving guys in motion or, you know, isolating guys on the outside. When he finds that matchup, he's going to pound on it until they do something to stop it, and then he's going to go look someplace else.
And we've got the quarterbacks with the arms who throw good deep balls, so definitely going forward makes me very excited. Let's move on to the next guy. Running back, 5'11", 190, Dejon Hewitt out of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, this dude is he's a lot like Markell Jones, the fact that he puts up absolutely insane numbers in high school, but he plays at a small high school, and it's sort of hard to tell how much is that is his greatness and how much of it is just he's just better than everybody on the field. So his junior year, he ran for 2,352 yards on 207 carries and averaged over 11 yards per carry, scored 41 touchdowns. And you see some of those numbers and you get a little suspicious. You're like, a lot of that is, you know, put him in 4A or 5A in Georgia, and those aren't going to be his numbers. He's still going to be a good player.
Right. I mean, you still have to have the vision to see those to break out. You still have to have some top-notch speed to get there.
So. Oh, yeah. Well, the big thing is he's faster than everybody he plays against. So once he gets into that second level, it's all over. But he's getting chased down by, like, you know, you or Kyle.
Sure, but you also have to assume he's going against, like, 9-person boxes, too. Which I guess helps with the long runs.
Yeah, and so as a sophomore, he gained 1,600 yards and had 23 touchdowns. So he's going to be a guy that's going to come in. He's certainly not going to lack for confidence because he's used to being the man on his team.
Which is funny because now when you look at running backs, there is no more man. It's by committee. Which is fine. So at least he should have a specific set of skills, some plays that now that we have a coach who's capable of using multiple. Talented running backs should be.
I mean, he's a promising, and he's going to be like Markell coming in. He's a big dude right now. He's like 5'11", 195. So expect him to add another 5 to 10 pounds just filling out. So he'll hit campus 5'11", 200, 205. That's a pretty substantial size. I know. Running back right out the box.
And then the last guy we have, probably not a ton to talk about, is just a 2-star from Michigan City, Chase Triplett. Outside linebacker, 6'3", 215. Looks like he's been moved around all the linebacking positions, which is good in high school. At least shows he's got some versatility. What do you expect from him in the college level?
Yeah, he's another guy. He's probably the best player on his high school team. And so they use him in every role, you know, any play where they can move him around to fill a hole, that's where he's going to go. So I'm watching his tape. He'll play on inside linebacker, outside linebacker. I think he's being recruited as sort of the hybrid, sort of like Danny Ezechukwu last year, sort of that hybrid end linebacker position where he's going to, sometimes he's going to come down and put his hand on the ground and rush the passer. Sometimes you're going to expect him to, you know, drop out and play coverage. When I was sort of mentioning earlier, Purdue right now, from what I've seen, is they recruit for a purpose. And so they're going to bring in guys that they have a specific idea of how they want to use.
That sounds like cheating.
They know when they're coming in, like, this is the role we want this guy to play. And I felt like too often in the Hazel era, they're just we get guys and they have no idea how to use them, or we just wouldn't use them. They'd be interesting players with a certain skill set. Because when you're looking at, like, 2-star, 3-star guys, and what you're looking to try to find is somebody with an elite skill, like one thing that they can do that you can get them on the field and then try to sort of build up the rest of their game. And
it sounds like for him it might be versatility, because that is a skill.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's going to be versatility rushing the pass from that outside, being able to be a guy that can play outside linebacker or put his hand on the ground. Obviously, he'll probably be a guy that comes in at redshirts, which is another sort of thing that we're doing with recruiting, is we're looking down the line and saying, all right, we're going to bring this kid in, and then we're going to get him in the weight room and get him in the, you know, get him in the nutrition program. So maybe he comes in at 6'2", 15, but he probably doesn't start playing until he's, you know, 6'2", 235, 240. And then what kind of player does he look like then, as opposed to now?
And Purdue's strength programming really is something to look at. They've been, Brown brought over a staff that's been killing it off the field.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. And if we could just sort of do some more of these podcasts, I'm going to start talking about some of our assistant coaches, because I really feel like Brom just knocked it out of the park with this staff. And this is the reason why we're so involved in some players that you wouldn't think we'd have any business even being mentioned in, because we've got just some great young guys that played before, that have played at a really high level before college football. I remember watching Chris Barclay absolutely eviscerate my Clemson Tigers when I was in school. You put up over 200 yards against us in a single game, just ripped our guts out because he was just running over people. He runs like a little bowling ball. And like Anthony Poindexter was just this murderer in the safety at Virginia. I remember watching him play Clemson and just blow up some of our wide receivers. So, I mean, these are guys that like people have heard of and that are, you know, young and hungry. And they're out just killing it on the recruiting trail. Jamarcus Shepherd, our wide receiver coach, is another guy. Just real, you know, personable, goes out, works hard. So I'm really impressed with the staff that Brahms put together. And, of course, his brother's the offensive coordinator, guy that everybody that played in the NFL. And you know, everybody watch play at Louisville. So we can get into more of that maybe in a different podcast.
Yeah. Well, and just the overall culture, just what Brahms has brought with like passion and energy, something that was severely lacking under Hazel. That man never moved on the sideline.
Yeah, and it's just a cohesive effort. I always felt like, you know, Hazel, the first day of practice, all the coaches wore name tags because nobody knew who anybody else was. It was like, who could we pull off the unemployment line? Our coaching strategy was who just got fired. That's who we went and, you know, scouted. And we brought some pretty good guys in, but it's hard to really get loyalty and, you know, everybody working for a common goal when you're basically just bringing in a new set of free agents every year. And as soon as somebody shows some potential, you know, another program's going to come, you know, scoop them up and we're not going to fight back.
Speaking of players changing programs, obviously, the first thing you look for when a coach comes over from another program are kids he takes from that program over to his new program. This is now the second year, so it's less of that. But what can we expect from the grad transfer market that will make an immediate impact on the field this year?
Well, we've already brought one in, Dennis Edwards, who, as you mentioned, is the guy that comes over from Western Kentucky. I mean, that says a lot about what Brahms players say about him. Is all these kids from Western Kentucky want to come play for him at Purdue. Like, you know, coach leaves, maybe you won a lot, but you didn't really like him or, you know, whatever. You don't have to play for that guy ever again. But these guys are coming back in and saying, yes, we want to graduate and we want to come to Purdue and play for Jeff Brohm because he's that, you know, good of a coach, and we respect him that much. Dennis Edwards has played under Purdue's current offensive line coach, Dale Williams, before, and he's a guy that's going to come in and be a huge part of Purdue being successful next year. Now Purdue has a backup center, and obviously Kirk Barron is entrenched in that spot. He's one of the best in the country. But, you know, we've got an easy backup plan for him now. We were using Victor Beach, who came in as the offensive tackle, who's a redshirt freshman, as our backup center. And now we've got a guy like Dennis Edwards, who's started at center and played in some pretty big games for Western Kentucky as our backup center. He'll come in, and it'll be interesting to see because it gives Purdue a lot of flexibility in terms of our lineup because we're going to figure out what we want to do with Matt McCann. It allows us to, if we want to, kick Matt McCann back out to right tackle. Which is where he started at Purdue, and then last year he moved inside. But in the spring we moved him back outside because both Hermans and the other guy who also had my name, Jesus Christ, what's wrong with me? Who's our other offensive tackle? He's a walk-on from.
I have no idea.
Jesus, where's my roster? Hold on, God damn it, brain is not working all the way today. Eric Swingler. Okay. Yeah, so he's a guy that comes in. Swingler and Hermans were both hurt in the spring. Swingler's coming off a shoulder injury. Hermans obviously coming off the ACL. So McCann kicked back out to right tackle. It'll be interesting to see how Hermans comes back. If he comes back full strength, then obviously he's going to probably start at left tackle. Swingler is a guy that we would love to be able to use as sort of our swing tackle, like, because he can play either left or right tackle, and that's something we would love to be able to have on the bench and be able to bring him in a three tackle rotation to keep our guys a little fresher. And bringing in Dennis Edwards on the interior, a guy you can just plug in and know that she's just gonna grind, is a huge benefit.
Has Brohm cobbled together a good offensive line?
It will kind of. It's still sort of speculative. Hermans look pretty good. Left tackle is the premier offensive line position, and we think we have a good one, but I think Hermans is going to be good and has NFL potential, but he's coming off the Purdue knee injury, and we're going to see what he looks like moving around. Came in at like 6'8", 240, and he's up to probably 6'8", 295, 300. He's a big kid, if he can pan out, I feel like the rest, we did a good job on the interior, bringing in Shane Evans, bringing in now a guy like Dennis Edwards, and Matt McCann was one of the big sort of hits in the Hazel recruiting era. So, you know, he played at Bishop, and I don't know how to pronounce the next part of it. Chattard? I don't know. I don't want to offend.
I should know, but I have no idea.
I don't want to offend anybody that went there. But they basically run like just a straight up running offense. Like if they pass the ball, it surprises everybody. So the problem with McCann had as a freshman is the first time he had to pass block in a game was probably the first time he'd pass blocked in a game. So we moved him inside last year and he did a really good job. He's a big mauler of dude. He's also a guy that's had shoulder injuries. So it'll be nice. Now Purdue can have a legit, you know, six or seven guys on the offensive line that are experienced and that can play. And I'm not going to say that it's going to be a great offensive line, but it's going to be serviceable. I really like what we do up. We're going to be able to do up the middle as far as the run game. That was sort of the real surprise last year. We were able to, after we sort of got in our flow, we're able to move some people off the ball in our run in the run game. Really helped out a lot.
Yeah, and we still have a bevy of talented running backs in the backfield. So
yeah, that's probably our strongest position. So there should be some holes to run through. And we were turned into, from Hazel era, was just sort of weird. A lot of times we were undersized on the line. But we've got a beefy offensive line right now. And so that'll be interesting to see if we can sort of establish that run game, because that's what Braum really wants to be able to do. Everybody talks about the passing game, but even at Western Kentucky, it was actually a really balanced attack. And the passing game opens up a lot of stuff right up the middle of the field, because you spread them out and you just pound them. You can pound them between the tackles, and all of a sudden those linebackers are pushed out there and the safeties are back. And so your running backs get a good chance to go, you know, beat one guy and then, you know, be able to get down the field as opposed to having a stack
box. Like you said
box.
Earlier.
Oh, keep going.
Like you said earlier, you know, he likes to throw deep on the outside, and the way you do that is by running successfully and pulling the safeties up.
Yeah.
And it's just a nice little duality between that. Either the safeties are back, you run on them, or they're up and, you know, you go for it all. All right, so we talked earlier about
grad transfer to talk about.
Oh.
Yeah, well, this is a potential grad transfer. Just a little update on the Hunter Johnson situation.
I was going to get to him.
We'll go back to him. Okay, we can cut this part.
We're going to give him his own little...
Okay, cool.
Five stars get their own little segment.
Fair enough.
So we talked about how Braum was... you know, big into using red shirts, really stacking up the talent, getting them into the gym. So give me a potential breakout this year that we did not see last year because Braum put a red shirt on them.
So one for offense
and one for defense.
Okay, on defense, there's several actual choices here just because the depth chart is so open. I want us to talk about Alan Daniels, who's a kid out of Georgia who we brought in. He's from Gwinnett, Georgia. 2016 first team All-State, big dude, and he's going to be coming 6'2", 305, maybe a little bit heavier. And he's the sort of run-stopping defensive tackle that Purdue's going to need. Right now, if you want to talk about places that we're shorthanded, defensive tackle is one of those places. We have six on the roster. Ideally, you want to play four or five defensive tackles. So Alan Daniels is a guy that I think could come in. And you look at our one known starter is Lorenzo Neal, and Lorenzo's not a guy you want to play 60, 70 snaps a game. He's big and he's fast, but like at 6'2", whatever he's weighing in at these days, 315, 320 plus, he's not a guy that you're going to be able to ride an entire game there in the middle. Or even if he is, the guy's going to be diminishing returns. He's going to be really good in the first and gassed in the fourth. And what I really liked about what Holt did last year is you saw him play a lot more players. Everybody was familiar with the Hazel fourth quarter implosions where our players could barely get up and drag themselves back to the line for another snap because he'd only play 11 or 12 players you know, and we'd go, poor Eddie Wilson out there. he's playing with like his whole arm.
Can't believe he didn't have more endurance. Yeah. Can't believe he wasn't a stamina runner.
Yeah, he's playing like 60 snaps with his arm like casted from his elbow to his, and just in a club trying to play. So, I mean, we'll play with a lot more players, and I think Daniels, while he might not be a super sexy, record a lot of tackles sort of player, he's definitely a guy that we're going to need to come in and sort of plug up the middle of the field. Defensive tackle is probably the hardest position to recruit. There's just not a lot of great defensive tackles available. So then you've got to sort of go and decide if you want to recruit smaller guys that you can feed up or kind of fat guys. And Hazel a lot of times
guys.
Went...
Hazel, I just want a lot of fat guys.
Yeah, Hazel went with a lot of the fat guys. The problem with the fat guys is they sort of just tend to stay fat. And so I think we'll see Brahms brings in a little bit smaller defensive tackles and tries to build them up and hopefully they still keep their athleticism as opposed to just bringing in just big guys that maybe don't have aren't quite as athletic or skilled. So I really like Alan Daniels. I think you'll probably see him on the field. And
a big secret to our defense last year was that teams could not run against us. And that starts right in the middle. You don't have to send extra safety help. You don't have to, you know, worry constantly they're going to leak holes.
Yeah.
If you can hold up front, generally teams are not going to be able to, you know, get into their runs, play actions, you know, and that's something we saw the Hazel era continuously.
We were really good at keeping our linebackers clean and then letting them flow to the ball and make tackles. That comes, again, it won't be super sexy. It doesn't show up on the stats sheet, but just having guys that can keep the linebackers or offensive line occupied so they're not constantly just up in the second level hunting out your linebackers is really important. Just establishing that line of scrimmage and not getting pushed back 3 yards. I remember watching, you know, we played Wisconsin and like the line of scrimmage would move 4 yards forward at the snap. They've got a 4 yard
Maryland run. Did that to us 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a 4 yard run before like the running back even encounters resistance. So, I think Daniels is the type of guy who's not going to let that happen. You're definitely not going to push this dude off the ball. He's going to hold his ground. So I'm sort of excited to see him on defense. On offense, I kind of want to see – offense is a little more challenging. We redshirted some offensive linemen. I'm not sure if they're going to be ready to go yet. Mark Stickford is one guy out of Carmel who's got some interesting potential, but I think by bringing in Edwards, actually, it sort of maybe pushes him back down a little further, probably where you should be, where this is going to be. Maybe he'll see a little bit of spot duty. So I'm going to go with Tyler Hamilton, a kid out of sort of my home state of South Carolina. He came out of Myrtle Beach. He was a really weird recruit because he committed.
Now, hold on. You told me Hilton Head before
sorry.
The podcast.
Yeah.
Now you're saying Myrtle Beach.
Sorry, you're right.
I lived in South Carolina. They're not the same place.
They are not. They are totally different places. And I deeply apologize to anybody from Hilton Head because Myrtle Beach is trash.
It is trash. Anyone that chooses Hilton Head or Myrtle Beach over like Charleston,
no,
you're a terrible person.
Well, the beaches in Myrtle Beach are just like mostly just Camel Light cigarette butts and maybe some Marlboro Red, and everybody's from Ohio and is just not.
I'm not for any place that has a wax museum.
Yeah, no, it's a terrible tourist trap. It sort of progressively got worse. Hilton Head is a beautiful island. Like, yeah, that's where the, you know, sort of the actual people from South Carolina go, is sort of in the low states. So yes, Tyler Hamilton from Hilton Head. Tyler, I'm sorry, I did not mean to offend you, but I'm going to talk nice about you now. He was a really weird recruit because he actually committed in between Hazel being fired and Brahm being hired.
Oh, no.
Yeah, like, so he was, he's a little guy, but he was ranked as a 4-star recruit by ESPN. He's an all-time Hilton Head High School leader with 45 career touchdowns, played running back and receiver. Now think about that. Remember we were talking about the recruit coming in from Nashville who had 45 touchdowns last year. At Hilton Head High School, 45 for a career is the record. Put that in perspective. But he played running back and receiver. He's going to be a guy that's going to come in the slot in play. It'll be interesting to see. He'll probably share some time with Rondale Moore. Purdue's going to use a lot of different wide receivers and a lot of different...
How many slot guys do we have?
We've got a lot. We've got Hamilton, I mean, and then Anthrop.
Anthrop is still sitting there.
And then we've got Kieron Catlett, who's probably going to play in the slot, and Rondale Moore. But where we're going to see a lot of is Purdue's going to... I keep saying a lot. We're going to spread the field out with four receivers and put two guys in the slot on either side in some packages. And you're still going to see us go two tight ends, too. We just have so many different options. And what Brom really likes to just look for those matchups. So if they're going to have a hard time, they don't have guys that can cover our tight ends, you're going to see two tight ends. If there's lacking in the defensive backs, then you're going to see Purdue go four wide. Even
you know what was really refreshing?
What was that?
Watching a football team that didn't decide to, if I'm going to run, I'm going to put three tight ends out there.
Yeah.
Bunch everyone up.
Oh, yeah. No.
And if I'm going to pass, I'm going to go five wide.
Yeah, it was nice to see.
There was a little more variance than that.
Yeah, no,
it was refreshing.
We were able to adjust. That was the Brom offense is able to adjust on the fly to what the defense is doing. Now, everybody, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, you need to just dictate the game to the defense. And if the defense is good at one thing, say the defense is good at stopping the run, you don't have to run the ball against them the whole time. This is how Alabama continuously wins the SEC West, and now the SEC West is finally starting to catch on. You can't run the ball against Alabama, even if you're a running team. It doesn't work. So what Alabama has trouble doing is stopping the pass. So even if it's nice to be able to, if you're a team, be able to adjust, and so you don't have to just run at the other team's strength the entire game. So for instance, Wisconsin, they're really tough and they're the team. I'll mention Wisconsin a lot because they're the team. If you can get better than Wisconsin, you can win our division.
Fair enough.
So against Wisconsin, you've got to be able to spread the field out because if you just get into a grinded out running game, you're going to get every time. Brahm's is going to be able to do a lot of stuff with Tyler the personnel Hamilton. He has. And you're going to see multiple looks. So it's not going to be a running, you know, it's not going to be just going to pound the ball to Markell, or it's not going to just be spread the field out and throw it 70 times. It's going to be, you know, what is the defense bad at covering? That's what we're gonna do.
And the nice thing about players like Tyler Hamilton, Anthrop, all these guys, we saw last year, Brom's screen game is impeccable. He has the right timing, when to call it. He's got some really clever options on it. And when you have multiple guys out on the field, not even just counting your running back, that can catch a ball at the line of scrimmage and make a 15 to 20 yard play.
Yeah, that makes everything
so hard to stop.
It makes everything so much easier. You'll see several wide receiver screen options. He runs a tunnel screen where the receiver starts on the outside and then comes back inside and hits the basically slot between the tight end and the slot receiver. And you'll see him throw the outside screen where you line up three wide, trips outside, and then...
Call that the bubble screen.
The bubble screen, yeah, where the two guys block at the line of scrimmage and one guy, drops off. And you just challenge them 3-on-3, basically. You turn football into a game of 3-on-3. Your three secondary players versus our three wide receivers. A guy like Hamilton, he's going to be a guy that can also help in the return game. He had some, ran for some, did that in high school, return kicks in high school. So he's another guy that could be looked out there. Our return game is going to go from to pretty good, and we're not going to have to put some of our big name running backs returning kicks anymore, which will be nice.
I feel like, especially in the college level where everything's not booted into the back of the end zone, strong return game is huge. I mean, that's good for just like field value. It's good for 4 to 7 points a game. If you consistently, you know, get an extra 10 yards than just your average 20 yard takeout.
Right. Starting at the 35 as opposed to the 25 is a huge advantage. And just having sort of that threat at all times back there that can break it just continues to keep pressure on the other team. You can't take the kickoffs off. And like I said, Purdue's going to have a lot of options back there. You won't see DJ Knox and Markell Jones returning kicks. Last year, probably anybody that can hold on to the ball while being tackled is an option. I mean, that's how we lost Jones in the first game. We lost him for like 3 or 4 games. He blew his shoulder on a on a kick return.
Right. Okay. So we are running. We're running a little long, but I will give you 2 minutes to talk to me about Hunter Johnson.
All right, Hunter Johnson. Right now, Clemson does the right thing in terms of recruiting or releasing players, and gave Hunter his full release. A lot of teams won't. A lot of teams won't do that. Nick Saban's just been a good interview talking about how he refuses to do that, but how it's a terrible idea. But Hunter got his full release from Clemson, meaning he can go anywhere, even in the ACC, even to a potential Clemson opponent. So Duke has jumped into the mix.
For a second, I thought you were going to call Duke a rival.
Duke's going to jump into the mix. I still think Purdue is the most probably interesting option for Hunter. Duke's got a hard ceiling. If you can win 8-9 games at Duke, that's it. I mean, that's the hard ceiling there. I feel like Purdue.
Then again, you win 9 games at Duke, you probably get the Heisman.
Yeah, I mean, Cutcliffe's a really good coach. Duke's an interesting place, but it's also the stadium is terrible. Tiny fan base is apathetic even when they're winning. So I don't see the real, being somebody that's watched ACC football my entire life, I do not see the real allure of Duke. It's just not.
You wrote a great article on Hunter Johnson. I would recommend everyone to go look at it at hammerandrails.com. And how good is he?
He's elite. He is an elite quarterback with elite NFL potential skills. He's athletic. He's got an incredible quick release. He would be the best quarterback that Purdue's had since Kyle Orton, talent-wise, arm talent-wise.
I thought we all agreed Brandon Kearse was the second-best quarterback at Purdue.
Actually, I would say Robert Marv, arm talent-wise, was probably the best that Purdue has had to offer since Kyle Orton, but he had knees like mine, which doesn't help. So Hunter Johnson is legit out of Brownsburg. And I think Hunter, if Brom had been at Purdue, I think Hunter would have been at Purdue already, when he was being recruited, because he fits the offense perfectly. He can do everything you want. He can run the ball. At Clemson, it wasn't that he was even that far off the pace. It's just that he got beat out by a true freshman coming in.
Hunter will have to sit out a year.
Yeah, so he'll have to sit out a year, but he didn't.
So he'll come to someone this season.
Yeah.
And redshirt that year.
Yeah. Okay. Clemson also doesn't redshirt their freshman five stars regardless, for this reason, that if they want to transfer, because Johnson easily could have redshirted last year for Clemson, but that would have put him in a tough position. So they kept that option open for him. So transfer is not a big deal. Come in, learn the offense for a year, and then compete for the starting position as a redshirt sophomore.
Which means for Purdue, if Hunter came 2019, not only would we have Karloftis coming, a potential five-star defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have Hunter Johnson come in the same year to play.
Right.
A former five-star.
And then let's just,
was he Mr. Football?
Yes, he was Mr. Football. He's
so potentially 2019 could be as big of a year for Purdue.
And then let's just get crazy and throw David Bell into that situation. As the stud wide receiver out of Indiana.
2020 national champion Purdue Boilermakers. You heard it here.
It's going to take a little more than that, but it will certainly make things a lot interesting. What I'm really excited about is Brom being able to recruit at this level so early at Purdue really probably bodes well for Purdue keeping him.
You would think. They've already given him one extension.
Given him one extension, and he can see now that,
it could work.
It can work. You can get players. And that was always sort of the thing of Purdue. Oh, you can't win at Purdue because you can't get the players. But Brom's able to start bringing in the players. Purdue's a really good situation, I think, right now, as far as potential for coaches go.
Yeah, because the Big Ten football-wise does not look as scary as it looked 5 years ago.
No. Everybody talks about Brom going to Louisville. Just keep in mind that if Brom goes to Louisville, to play in the ACC championship game, he has to be better than Clemson and Florida State.
I'd rather beat Wisconsin and Penn State every year.
Yeah, right?
All right, so we've pretty much spent the entire podcast talking about, how Brom, everything kind of correlates to how Brom has been able to turn this program around. What he did last year was incredible. No one had any expectations. Next thing you know, we win a bowl game, despite losing at the beginning of the year our starting quarterback. And then, winning those games with a guy who had a, torn MCL, ACL, whatever it was.
ACL, yeah.
ACL. So what is he? What do we have to look forward to this year? What is Brohm going to do to keep that momentum going? The recruiting's nice, but you know, Lafayette, West Lafayette, they are fickle fans. If we start losing a bunch of games again, tickets will stop selling. That has happened in basketball. It's happened in football. What does he do to keep the momentum going this year?
The offense is going to be exciting. That's this last year, a lot of people talked about Brohm's offense. Last year leaned heavily on the defense, where there was a lot of Hazel holdovers that got put in new spots and really thrived and had a lot to prove. And the offense really took a while to get going until those last four or five games of the year. But I think this year the offense is going to be out there scoring 30, 40 points a game. It's going to look a lot like a return to the Tiller era, where we're going to come out and play basketball on grass. And
now, are you still completely Team Sindelar?
Yes.
Do you expect it to be a quarterback back and forth again, though?
I think Blau will have some packages that he plays in.
Wow, you're downgrading him to package QB.
Yeah. It's just I think he'll have some packages to play in. I like David Blau. I always feel like I come off as like I don't like David Blau. David Blau is a great guy, a great team leader. David Blau makes mind-numbingly stupid decisions in the worst possible times.
But when he broke his leg, he had like a three-game stretch where he hadn't.
Kind of. He still throws the ball late over the middle and two linebackers. That is his, like...
Linebackers can't catch, though. It's fine.
No, when you hit him right in the numbers.
They're big oafs.
When you hit him right in the numbers, it just sticks in there. He throws interceptions to linebackers and, like, defensive ends. Sindelar throws interceptions to, like, defensive backs down the field.
40 yards downfield.
Yeah, 40 yards down the field. Blau just, he's good, and then just something happens. Like that Minnesota game, that people forget, that was really the... the like crucial game of the year. Purdue doesn't beat Minnesota, which we had no right to beat Minnesota that game. We don't go bowling, and Blau was terrible in that game. Threw two just bad in the middle of the field. So I don't trust David Blau. I've seen him play enough. I don't trust him sitting back there and throwing the ball 30 times a game. But that said, he's way more athletic, and we can do a lot more stuff with the running game with David Blau, depending on how his ankle is. He's a guy that you can do a lot of zone read, the ball outside, whereas Sindelar, you can maybe run a stretch play with it. That's right. Like the extent of he can get out to the running back maybe and make that handoff, as opposed to Blau, who can sort of get outside, and then you can move the pocket around with Blau. Sindelar, you know where he's going to be. He's going to be somewhere behind the center in the shotgun. So I think that's the packages you'll see with Blau. We'll come in and we'll move him around.
Let me put it this way then, because I get what you're saying. Out of the Big Ten, how many other schools have a better QB situation than we do?
As far as experience-wise, Purdue probably has the best. Now, obviously, Ohio State's got...
Well, not just experience. I mean, talent is just as vital.
You know, with Michigan bringing Shea Patterson in, that's pretty impressive. They'll have a pretty good...
Are we sure? Because I feel like every Michigan quarterback has sucked for 10 years.
Yeah, they can't grow their own, but Patterson was really good at Ole Miss.
I'll believe it when I see it. They've had 4- and 5-star guys that have just been garbage.
Yeah, no, I think Jim Harbaugh has this weird reputation as this quarterback whisperer.
It's because he had Andrew Luck,
yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, and, like, but... Yeah, he's not.
I could have coached Andrew Luck in college.
I haven't seen it at Michigan. His offense is stuck somewhere in like 1987, and along with his pants. I think Jim Harbaugh is the most overrated coach in college football.
Snap, you heard it here. I can't think of a better way to end this, actually. That works. Drew, thank you for joining us. We will spend all summer podcasting, diving deep. As you heard, Drew wants to talk about all our assistant coaches. He wants to get down in the nitty-gritty. And we will have that for you throughout the year. We're going to probably try to do this once every week, maybe once every couple weeks. Drew, any last words?
Nope, things are looking good. Full steam ahead right now. We are living in the best possible Purdue football timeline right now.
All right, well, thank you for listening. And everyone, check your Twitter or your iTunes feeds. I think we're on Stitcher.
Yeah,
wherever we're at, it'll be in the post. And go ahead and leave us a comment, rate us, review us, all that helps. And stay tuned. We will be doing a basketball podcast very shortly as well. Thank you.
Bye.